Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy throwback insert day here. How is everyone doing?
Boy, it's been a minute, hasn't it, my friend?
It is, but now it's autumn. And to celebrate autumn, here autumn. Is Kevin David Thomas with Maltby and Shire's Autumn.
You gotta love it. Oh my God, I love Maltby and Shire. I was just listening to Closer Than Ever the other day.
They're doing pretty good for themselves. There's a revival of Baby happening at out of the box theatricals with Julia Murney. And right. God bless Richard and David, because I was going to say Dick. God bless Richard and David, because the middle couple now is a same-sex couple.
Oh, but yes, that's right.
How wonderful is that?
Updating the little baby,
Thank you. We love progress. And they just got honored by the York Theater.
They did. They just had their gala, right? Where they honored them. Yeah.
So congrats to previous guests.
They deserve it.
Maltby and Shire. David did one episode, and Richard, I think, is still at Shetler Studios. Talking about starting here, starting now. So somebody
did
has
a series,
to
you might say. Did a series with
the only spinoff in podcast history, Richard Maltby.
The only time where they came back to us and said, "Can we please do more?" Please?
Oh, I love that man. He is such a sweet guy. How have you been, Mr. Thomas?
Well, all of a sudden you blink your eyes and it's November. It's wild, you know. And you know, we've taken a little break this year from the podcast, but boy, it's been busy. I mean, I'm of course teaching still. I'm currently music directing Into the Woods at the Professional Conservatory of Musical Theater. That's where, listeners, you may remember, Rob and I did Merrily We Roll Along a couple years back. And so that's on December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. We're doing that with the students.
If you click in our info description, there's a link so you can purchase tickets to go support Mr. Thomas. I think I'm going to go on opening.
Oh, I think you should go Into the Woods. Intimate production. Yeah.
Have you ever music directed Into the Woods before?
I have not, actually.
Have you ever been in Into the Woods before?
I have, actually. I played Rapunzel's. That was actually one of the last shows I've done, in the last couple of years, up at Northern Stage, where I met my wife in Vermont. I played Rapunzel's Prince. Great role, because you really come in for the funny song. You can go do a crossword puzzle and hang out in your dressing room. And then second act rolls along and you sing another 3-minute song. Same song, different words. Get a couple laughs and then go back and finish the crossword puzzle. It's really quite wonderful.
It's a princess track, as some people might say.
That's right. But no, it's really fun to be on this side of it. Because when you have listened, I mean, gosh, we've all seen the Bernadette Peters, we've seen the original. I mean, they filmed it so you can actually, I love that all those Sondheim musicals, you can see the original cast. But to really be in it, it's just another point of view that I never really got. And all of the layers that are in there with the music, and the themes that are in, like, woven into the tapestry of it is really pretty incredible. And we're going to do a reduced orchestration. So it's just going to be piano. I'll have keyboard with like a couple like fanfare type sounds and thin sound effects, and then just a flute and a violin. I want it to be really kind of like a little chamber, nice little small setting.
I love that. I cannot wait to see it.
Thank you, Rob. Yeah.
Somebody told me, and maybe you know this, or maybe a listener can confirm this for me, that somebody said, this is great reporting. Somebody said, they do it on a lot of the news stations. Why can't we do it?
Exactly.
That Stephen Sondheim said that Into the Woods, the word woods has a double meaning. Woods as in the forest, but woods as in W-O-U-L-D-S, like I would do this, or what would happen if.
Right, woulda, shoulda, coulda. Yeah. Totally.
And I don't know if that's true or not.
Oh, I wonder, I'm on my docket is to go back and watch. There's this great Sort of, I want to almost call it a documentary. It was like a 45-minute piece on YouTube from the 80s where Sondheim and Lapine talk about it. It's for people doing Into the Woods to understand it a little bit. I think it was to help teachers and such back then, because it was kind of, it was dealing with some new things in the Bettelheim parallel with the uses of enchantment, of the fairy tales and all the psychological stuff, the Freudian stuff that they layered into, because that was a lot of it what it's based on. And a lot of, I think people can perhaps miss that. But I wonder if it's, if he mentions it there. I will have to go check that
so,
out.
So, friends, let us know if you know if this is an accurate quote, and
Woods?
If so, Woods, would this be correct? And just let us know. We're curious.
Yeah,
we're curious.
How have you been keeping busy? Because I know you have a lot. I want to tell everyone, please go listen to This Was a Thing, the new podcast that Rob has. It is not musical theater based, although you do definitely have musical theater fun on there. But it is, I have to tell you, I look forward to it every single Tuesday. I absolutely love it. I love it so much. It gives us deep dives on, well, you've probably got a much better pitch for what it is because you've been doing it for a while, but it's deep dives on forgotten nostalgic topics. But they go each week. You and your co-host take turns, sort of like hosting. I want to say because you each and they're just like the last one was on the President Harrison and the assassination, and then about you know, the amendment and all and how we elect president. I mean, it was just so well done. You got to flex the old poli sci degree there.
I did. It's thank you, Kevin. That means the world to me.
I love it.
No one will ever replace you. He's a lovely guy, but he's a side piece, Kev. Don't worry about it.
But we should put the link in the
yes,
thing so that they
yes.
can go listen to that, because it's just so much fun.
Although I have to tell you, and I think I texted this to you, it's amazing how all of these worlds interconnect. So my co-host's father, this is what a world. He was, for the longest time, and I think still is the number one Elvis impersonator in the country. I swear
so
to God.
So says every Elvis impersonator.
This man was sanctioned by Elvis Presley's estate.
Wow.
And yes. So anyway, I know they all say that, but then if you do the research on Raymond Michael.
There really is one.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
Raymond Michael.
So I was talking to Raymond Michael about him being an Elvis impersonator, and he was saying to me, he goes, oh, he's like, I used to open up for a lot of acts in Las Vegas, big acts. And he said, the act that I opened for the most, though, he goes, oh, was Robert Goulet. And he told a story about that Robert Goulet in Vegas at this time was a big drinker, and none of the casinos wanted to hire him.
Oh,
and
wow.
Wayne Newton was like, hey, listen, I will take care of him. I will make sure that he stays sober and that he can do performances, and it's on me. So Robert Goulet was married to Carol Lawrence at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently in his dressing room, it was all sodas, and he put up a crucifix to show that he had found God. And he was sober. And then as soon as Carol Lawrence would leave, the cross would come down, alcohol would come flowing into the room. And apparently he had a girlfriend who they named Jaws.
No.
And I'm assuming, I hope it's because she liked the movie Jaws. But, and he had this huge ring. And the guy was saying he used to go up to people, and he was drunk, but friendly, be like, hey, hey, and give somebody like a fist bump on the shoulder. And this huge ring would like bruise them. And people were like, Robert, you can't keep doing this. Like, okay. And then finally one day he did it to a busboy, mm-hmm. and the busboy punched Robert Goulet in the face. And Robert Goulet just got up and laughed and said, he's feisty.
That's a great story.
But it tops even more, because my co-host's father then said, he said, I didn't get started as an Elvis impersonator. I did opera first. And he goes, I had a really great opera teacher in Vegas. He's like, someone you probably don't even know. His name was Sergio Franchi.
No.
And he goes, I had to stop going to him because I couldn't understand what he was saying. And I was like, my mind is so blown right now. So it all connects. Now, repeat after me a warm-up. I am going to the buffet.
Como se dice coconut grove, eh?
Do you know how to play Keno? Remember Keno? The
yes,
old black
of course.
Crayon game? It was fun for the whole family. So anyway,
well,
thank you.
Fun. That's
thank
a good
you for
tie-in.
That. And I think I can finally announce this because it's online, so I feel like it's okay now. I have been working on a book. I wrote a play, Mr. Jaffe, about life on a train. I call it Life on a Train. That's a little bit of on the 20th century.
On the 20th century for you,
Cy
Coleman.
I wrote none of the notes, though, but it's the essence. I have been working on a book for the past 2 years.
Yes.
And Kevin is a contributor to the book as well. And the book is called 50 Key Stage Musicals. And it's going to be available for purchase March 31st, 2022. You're able to buy it now early. If you click into the info description, there's a link for you to purchase the book. There's this wonderful publishing company in England called Routledge Press. And they have a series called 50 Key, fill in the blank, 50 Key Choreographers, 50 Key Film Directors. And they approached me about writing a book called 50 Key Stage Musicals. So it's 50 musicals that I and my co-editor, Shannon Agnew, feel changed the history of musical theater. And each chapter is written by a different author. Kevin is a contributor. Peter Felici is a contributor. Lawrence Maslin. Laura Francos, Rupert Holmes wrote our chapter on HMS Pinafore.
Yeah,
and so the first show is Black Crook, and we end with Dear Evan Hansen.
Fantastic.
So we're proud of what we've done. It's been a long time. It's been 2 years in the making. But yeah. In addition to the book, we felt in this day and age, it's better for, not better, but it's good for students to embrace the world of podcasting as an educational tool. And so there will be a supplemental podcast that also gets launched on March 31st called 50 Key Stage Musicals, the podcast, which is being hosted and produced by the Broadway Podcast Network. And each chapter has an interview with the author or somebody that was related to the original production.
You are a podcast impresario, Robert.
No, I am the Hal Prince of podcast.
That's fantastic. I'm so there. He just put his glasses on his head. You guys, that's it's spitting in
no,
the old
but,
Hal.
But anyway, and Kevin wrote the chapter on
Oklahoma! Exclamation mark.
And it's fantastic.
Fun. It was really fun.
Our hope is that teachers will give this book to students. To be introduced to the musicals that change the landscape. And the big thing is, and I know we're going to get a lot of people tweeting and saying,
little
where's
pushback.
This little pushback? Where's this show? Where's that show? Our definition was musicals that allowed other musicals to occur. So as much as I love The Music Man, I don't know what other musicals The Music Man paved the way for.
Mm-hmm.
I love Hairspray. I don't know what other musicals Hairspray paved the way for. So
catch me if you can. It's paved the
and
way
so
for that.
For that, I think we're yeah. Okay. So anyway, I'm really proud of what we created. I hope that you'll buy the book. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. But that's been one of the things that's been keeping me and Kevin, I know, busy over the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
So I wish it was a pop-up book or a scratch and sniff. Like you,
Pearl Bailey. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like you scratch and sniff company. It smells like a vodka stinger.
Nice.
So, anyone out there, any enterprising individuals, take my scratch and sniff musical theater idea.
Children's book.
Run, you know, kids love it. Kids really love it, if nothing else. So I've been doing that, and then my theater company's coming back again.
I'm so excited, Rob. What shows are you doing? This is
thanks,
pal. Spotlight Musical Theater Company.
Thank you. And once again, there's a link in the info description. You're more than welcome to go and buy season tickets and support us. If you buy season tickets, you're really getting three shows for the price of two when you really look at it. So come join us. We'd love to have you. We're starting with a class act. Which closed on our opening in 2020 because it was the night the pandemic occurred and quarantine happened. But we're doing a class act, which is the Ed Kleban bio musical. First time it's being done in New York since it was on Broadway. A Day in Hollywood, A Night in the Ukraine, which is also the first time I believe it's being done in New York since it was on
Incredible.
Broadway in a professional production, which we're very excited about because there might be some new material in it. We'll see. because one of the writers is still with us. And then we'll be ending with Meadowlark, i.e. The Baker's Wife, Stephen Schwartz and Joseph Stein's The Baker's Wife, which is a personal favorite of mine. I think it's a gorgeous score. Dare I say it might be his best score. And when you look at all the other great musicals he's done, you know, that's a pretty big compliment to give, but I think it's an accurate compliment. So I'm very excited that is our season.
And when does this run? When do these shows
the
run?
First show, Class Act, opens February 10th, and then Baker's Wife closes March 20th. So what we do is we do 2 weekends of one show, then 2 weekends of the second show, then 2 weekends of the third show. Great. All at Theater Row on 42nd and 9th Avenue. Please, if you're in New York, or you're coming to New York to see encores, some people we know make a double trip out of it. They'll see an encore show, and then they'll come see us. And the encores has a really great season,
My
I think.
My goodness.
The Tap Dance Kid, The Life, and Into the Woods. Another Into the Woods.
Interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we had talked about this with Jack Vertel, which is, you know, it's really they have to do one show that they know is a guaranteed moneymaker for them.
Right.
To support the other two shows.
Right.
And this Into the Woods is pretty stacked. Sarah Bareilles, Christian Borle, Heather Headley.
I'm excited for the Dooley Hill in the Tap Dance Kid. I think I'm excited, of course, for all the others in Into the Woods as well.
No, but
you never get to see Tap Dance Kid. I mean, you just that's no. just something you see. It's
and so The I'm Life really pumped for that. And Billy Porter's reworking The
come
Life.
On.
So I'm excited. I know that there are some people that are not over the moon about the selection over there this year because they feel that the shows are not as classical as some things in other seasons. We're 30 years away from these shows now.
It's okay.
I think it's okay to be doing these shows now. If the concern is about time, rest assured. If you have other concerns about the season, you can kindly see yourself out the door.
Bye bye.
If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So please come up and see us. Also, talking about seeing things, I feel like I've been at the theater a lot lately.
I feel like you've been busy,
so it's
I've been
fine.
Rehearsing at night, and it's hard. It's just much, much harder. Although I have tickets on Wednesday to go see one of my favorite musicals of all time, Caroline or Chain.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Caroline.
I'm seeing that.
Yeah, I'm so pumped. So ready for it. So excited. Yeah.
I was going to say with former guest Chip Zine as the grandpa.
That's right. Yeah.
So this should be good.
So excited. I'm so excited. In fact, yeah. And I'm just, it's one of my, I think it's my first Broadway show since being.
Wow.
Back,
you know? So welcome back, my friend. No, welcome back.
No. But you've seen, because I've said no to you like 5 times.
Yes. I keep asking you and you've got other things to do, which is totally understandable. Then what's going to be fun is in the spring, I think we'll flip.
Yes, you're right.
Which is you'll be seeing everything and I'll be like, I can't. I got rehearsal. I saw former guest AJ Holmes's show, Yeah, But Not Right Now, down at Soho Playhouse. It was fascinating. If you remember, AJ was a guest on our show a while back. He's been in Book of Mormon for years and years and years. And it's a very confessional show about how he can't stay faithful to or he couldn't stay faithful to his girlfriend. And you sit there and you go, oh shit, it's not Book of Mormon jokes.
Real. Yeah.
He's being very real right now.
He's playing the piano. He's accompanying himself. It's like a full experience.
Oh my God. It's him at a piano. He's a brilliant piano player. And if you watched Fosse Verdon, he played John Kander in the Fosse Verdon show. He is just incredible. But that was very interesting because I think it was interesting to watch because a lot of the people there were in their teens and early 20s. And I think they knew he was part of like Team Star Kid, which did the Harry Potter musical.
Right.
And I think they were expecting that. And then to hear him talk about he has a problem with fidelity. It was interesting to watch this young group of people go from optimistic to cynical in 90 minutes. but I think it was a great show. I finally saw Six. I was in J3. I finally saw Six, and Kevin, I'm proud of myself. I was able to avoid Six all throughout the pandemic because I was like, I want to be surprised.
You like to experience it because I love that album. I think I just can't wait to see it because of the album. I think the songs are so contagious.
It is so good. It is so good. An older person walking out said something along the lines of like, well, they sort of felt like it was like a thesis, like a graduate thesis. And I don't, if it is, this is a great graduate thesis. I don't know what else to say. If this was a school project, I had a great time. But for me, what was so wonderful, and this was my first musical back.
Mm-hmm.
What I found so special, and I'm wondering if you'll have this when you go as well. The audience was filled with tons of female identifying audience members, I think in like the teen, early 20s demographic.
Yep.
They know this show backwards and forwards. And as the show unfolds, they cheer at the right moments. It was so exciting to watch a whole new generation fall in love with musical theater.
Yeah.
Like that, that to me, I mean, yes, the show on stage is incredible. It really is. But you look around and you watch the show that's happening in the audience, and it's even better. I will say it's very funny. At the beginning of the show, they introduce the women, the wives of his, by like how they died or how they got in, out of the marriage. And after each one, the audience like screams. It's almost like announcing like a boy
band.
It's a concert. So someone's like, beheaded. And you hear, it's beheaded. Divorced. Oh my God, I'm divorced. And you're like, what is
died.
Happening? Yeah, and you're totally. Yeah. So I think it's a fantastic show. And yes, I've been listening to the album a lot since then, but that live experience is pretty special.
Yeah, and that's one of the hottest tickets right now, isn't it?
It is a hot ticket.
Because, you know, there's a lot of, we were talking before we got on air that, you know, you can go on tdf.org and you can really find a lot of great shows right now are not, they're not all selling out right now, so you really can see a lot of great theater for a really decent price. But boy, if you want to see Hadestown, Six, or Hamilton, those are hot tickets.
And they always seem to have tickets to the I Do that's starring Chad Kimball and Laura Osnes. That one seems to be available a lot if you're a big Jones and Schmidt fan.
But vaccination,
keep that vaccination card in your pocket, so you don't even have to bring it out.
Yeah, don't even have to.
You know, speaking of vaccination optional, you want to know something weird that happened? I went to go see the dress rehearsal of the Radio City Christmas Spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
Which I had never seen before, by the way. So I was blown away. But as I was walking into the lobby, one of the people that worked at a Radio City Music Hall, I don't know if it was a house manager, an usher, or security, I don't know, but looked at me and said, you know, you don't have to keep your mask on. And I was so surprised by that. You don't have to keep your mask on. I was like, I kind of want to keep my mask on. I kind of don't want to kill anybody. So isn't that interesting? I'm wondering if anyone else, I've never been like, take that thing off, what are you doing?
In fact, I've had the opposite, where people were encouraged to keep it on, you know, I mean, to in the audience, you know, to say, you know, everyone on stage will be off, but, you know, we would like you, if, you know, at all possible, please keep your mask on for the
entire what it's like for the performers to look out and you don't see smiles, or you don't see faces. It is what it is. I mean, there's nothing you can do. But you know where I was curious by that? I just saw Lackawanna Blues, the Ruben Santiago Hudson one man show. Is at MTC. And first of all, he's brilliant. And it's a revival of a show he had done previously. But he does so much talking to the audience, and so much of it is a connection to the audience, that I'm wondering what's it like for him to not be able to see that the other instrument that he's responding off of.
Right.
You know, everything has to be auditory now for him to know what's working and what's not working. You know what is working, and I had a great time at?
What?
Douglas Lyon's Chicken and Biscuits.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen Chicken and Biscuits?
I have not. No, I have not seen anything yet.
You talk. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Let me ask you again. It is a joyous evening in the theater.
Oh.
It is a joyous evening in the theater. Norm Lewis, Michael Urie.
I love Norm.
It puts a smile on your face from start to finish.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
If you've not seen Chicken and Biscuits, please go do so. The Lehman Trilogy. Also a fantastic experience. Actors knocking it out of the park. It is
really solid actors. Really,
oh, man. Kev, it's 3.5 hours long, and it doesn't feel 3.5 hours long. Mm. It's Simon Russell Beale, mm-hmm. Lee Godley, and Adrian Lester, who Adrian Lester was the Bobby and Company that Sam Mendes did in the 90s, which is all on YouTube now. It's brilliant. I don't know what else to say except that it's brilliant. But to me, the most brilliant thing I have seen since I got back is Dana H.
I've been reading so much about, people say that this performance is truly, like, how does she do it every, you know, 8 shows a week or whatever. They're saying it's, Kevin, just incredible.
This is one of those things where it's like, yes, not all of the most brilliant theater is on Broadway. Dana H is written by the playwright Lucas Nath, and it's about his mother and the 5 years that his mother was held as a captive in a very long kidnapping. It's a one woman show. It's being performed by an actress named Deidre O'Connell. I did not know the conceit of the show going into the show.
Oh,
all I knew was, I was like, oh yeah, it's a one woman show and she gets kidnapped. Okay, got it. I didn't know what the conceit of it was. Does everyone know what the conceit is? Is it pretty like, is this all they talk about?
I had read about it, but just because this was sort of an off Broadway show,
okay,
being done on Broadway and just, well, what's going on there.
If you don't want to, I'm going to tell you, but if you want to skip this, the conceit, that's totally fine. I didn't realize it's a transcription of his mother talking, and the actress Deidre O'Connell lip syncs to the transcript, lip syncs to the actual interview. What could easily be a gimmick is one of the most brilliant moving pieces of theater I've ever seen. I don't know what else to say.
Okay.
And I kept thinking, is it because I haven't been in the theater a long time? Is it because I'm really fascinated by this? No. It is such a wonderful, wonderful creation. And when they announced that it was closing early, it made me so sad, and it made a lot of other people sad. And that's why now they're extending 2 weeks. So friends, this is something you don't want to miss. You do not want to miss. Please, 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 please go see Dana H before it closes. It is one of the most fascinating theatrical experiences you'll ever have.
Oh, wow.
Now, I know, Kevin, you and I did not get cast in the Wicked movie.
We really tried,
but that's okay. And we wish our successors, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, the best of luck. Are you excited about the casting of this film? Because it set the social media world afire.
Ablaze. The musical theater Twitter was all over the place. It was unreal. Everyone was just going crazy. I'm excited. I think Cynthia Erivo is genius casting. They both been on Broadway. I mean, it's not like you can't say, well, they've never had any experience. Nope, they are, you know, Ariana was a youngin, but still, I mean, it's, and I'm excited to see her mentor is literally Kristen Chenoweth. I mean, there's a connection here. So
I think we're fine.
Yes. I say yes. I think that, you know, yeah, I'm very excited about it.
Not a huge fan of people judging things they haven't seen yet.
Right. Or the idea of it, you know.
Or the idea of it. Yeah. You know,
yeah, I quite agree.
There's sometimes, and this, I think this happened with the Dear Evan Hansen movie, which I've seen since our last episode together. It makes me sad that our community just loves to tear itself down and cannot figure out, you know, when the Dear Evan Hansen movie came out and everyone, just based on the still images that came out, shat all over it.
A lot of vitriol there. Yeah.
You know, here's what I wanted to say. You know, musicals rarely make money in the cinematic universe. And what I'm confused by is we gave you the prom. Like, they gave you the prom. They gave you the prom, which was this musical that didn't run, that they could have picked 90 million other musicals to do, and they decided to tell the story of the prom. Everyone shat all over that for various reasons. Why isn't the original cast doing it? Why isn't the original cast doing it? Okay, now we'll do Dear Evan Hansen, and we'll put that person in. Why is he in this movie?
He's too old. Yeah,
he's too old. And no matter what Hollywood tries to do, every time that we jump on this negativity bandwagon, at some point they're going to be like, well, what's the point, guys?
Right.
The audience that we're making it for doesn't want to see it. I saw the Dear Evan Hansen movie, and you have not seen it, right? Because I know
I tried to. Yeah, I want to. I have to wait till it's streaming because I did not get it.
I do not think it's as bad as everybody is saying it is. And I say that to people, and they look at me like I have two heads. I found the movie more interesting on screen than I did on stage.
Mm, wow. Yeah, I have not heard that opinion often.
No. And my feeling is it the best movie ever made? No. Is it a great movie? No. But is it a? It's fine. But the amount of hatred that came after this film is absolutely beyond.
And him particularly.
I mean, and him. And him, like, this is what you want. You want, and here's what, you know what, if he had stepped aside and said, hey, I'm going to let this new star do it, or this teenager do it, people would go, why isn't Ben Platt doing it?
Right.
Yeah, it's like
lose. Yeah,
it's a lose-lose. Really. And eventually at some point Hollywood's going to be like, folks, we ain't doing this anymore. And then people are going to go, why aren't they making this into a movie? Well, you had your chance.
Well, or here's another sort of hot button issue. The Diana filming. Did you happen to watch
it? I did watch Diana.
I was in it the whole time. I have to tell you, I was thoroughly entertained. Thoroughly entertained.
I don't know what that was, but I was. It had former guest Judy Kay, and she was brilliant. I don't know what the hell that was. I don't know what else to say. Yes, I watched it. I watched it high. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I'll be honest with you.
Fun. It was a fun time.
And it was a fun. It was a fun time, kids. But you know what? I will be honest with you. I don't foresee a long life happening for Diana. I'm not talking about the show. I'm just talking about based on the movie that I saw. But I am happy that something like Diana is preserved. How great would it have been maybe 20, 30 years ago for these musicals that did not run very long to get that sort of quality production? Things like Bandstand, things like Allegiance, things like Diana, I think it's fantastic to have them captured.
The fact that we can have a preservation of the stage production of both Hamilton and Diana, and we live in a world where both exist, I think is... We're lucky.
We are in the golden age.
Not like that when we were kids. All we had was like the Brandy Cinderella, which was great with Whitney Houston, but like there wasn't a lot of there. That wasn't even a stage production, so we didn't. No. There wasn't a lot that was preserved. Into the Woods that we talked about at the top of the hour. I mean, that was really it. I mean,
and that was it. You're absolutely correct. So I like that this is getting done, and I'm like I said, you know what? Maybe Diana was not my cup of tea. No pun intended. but somebody will see it and somebody will watch it and somebody will say, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. And that young person will grow up to be maybe our next Sondheim or our next Audra McDonald. Like the more of this stuff that we get out there that says theater is a great place to be and it's a place for you to create, to inspire people, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Same.
I don't see anything wrong with that. So that's, I'll get off my soapbox to get on a higher soapbox, which is the Tony Awards happened.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Did they?
I was told that they happened. I saw something on Paramount Plus.
I got
a subscription for Paramount Plus.
I was gonna get a subscription, and we have too many. There's just too many subscriptions. I just couldn't do it.
Did you do what everyone else did, which was buy it then cancel it?
I was going to. No, I didn't. I just did, because I knew I would have forgotten to cancel it, to be honest.
Folks, one of the things that we've always, this surprised me. One of the things that we've always done when we did this podcast on a weekly regular, basis, yeah. on a regular basis, we're busy. Do you hear how busy Kevin is? The man has a child. The man is at Into the Woods every night. I'm sitting here writing a book. We're busy people.
That's right.
Closed. No, one of the things that we always did was we had our great friend Brian Hobgood come on as a Tony Awards historian, and we recorded a Tony Awards show. And would you believe, I didn't post it because I forgot about it. Would you believe that on the day of the election, November of 2020, the three of us gathered on Zoom and recorded our Tony Award predictions? And
that's right.
And that thing has been sitting on my computer for a freaking year now. But we thought, we said who we thought was going to win. We thought this, we thought that. And then by the time the Tonys came rolling out this couple of months ago, I forgot to post it. And then afterwards, I was like, what? I mean, I don't know. It felt weird to me. It felt weird. I don't know what else to say.
Very much agree. And that's part of the reason why I didn't watch it in time. I just watched some of the clips afterwards because I just didn't, appeal to me the way that they have in the past for whatever reason, because felt obligated to do it. I don't know. It just felt odd. Like there's always going to be a little asterisk on this.
Yeah. And you know, I felt weird about putting it behind a paywall.
Yeah.
The first part felt weird to me, putting it behind a paywall, and somebody said, oh, but you know, they used to divide the show. Remember it used to be on PBS. Yeah. For like an hour, and then I moved to CBS, and I'm like, yeah, but at least that was free.
Yeah, that's
PBS. You know, it was, you're switching channels. This is you. That made me feel a little wonky. I think Audra McDonald did a great job hosting. I think if nothing else, Jennifer Holliday was worth the Paramount subscription alone. Jeez. But it made me so sad because I'm like, this is what people should be seeing, and you have to pay to see it.
Right.
So that made me a little sad. And then, you know, it was Christmas Carol won all the design awards. It was like, what was its competition?
Who knew?
And I kept sitting there being like, if Aaron Tveit doesn't win, like, this is just, it just didn't feel right to me.
Yes, it was odd.
And I felt there was such tonally what I couldn't figure out was they kept saying, it's about the future. It's about the future. It's about the future. It's about, and then all it was a celebration of the past.
Right.
It was just like I was like, this isn't matching up for me.
Yeah.
This isn't matching up. I can't figure this out.
Where's the future? Yeah.
You didn't show me the future. You kept showing me the great things from the past and talking about the future. I would also like to go back to a time. Remember when they used to do scenes from plays?
Yep.
People were like, oh, that's so awkward. I don't think it's awkward.
No, now it's like, done it's, right.
No, it's like a clip from a movie.
Sometimes they would have, remember they had, sometimes they were all on stage together. They would do little monologues.
Okay. Yes. I will say that's when it got weird. Do you remember? I think it was like 92 or 93 where they were like, let's show you how a play happens. First, this is how this actor auditioned for the song of Jacob Zulu and then did like a monologue from that. That's right. When I was like, now this is getting weird. I used to like when it was like they brought out Mary Tyler Moore and she would come out reading off a cue card. Neil Simon's Broadway Bound is a comedy. Just like flip the card. All you got to do is just set it up, do a scene and get out of the way. I wish we had seen that. I would love to have seen a scene from The Inheritance. I would love to have seen a scene from Slave Play. I thought Slave Play was going to win Best Play. I was totally wrong. I'm happy it's coming back, though. No, that's no shade to The Inheritance. I was surprised that that happened. I thought Jagged Little Pill was going to win Best Musical.
I did too.
And that did not happen. And I don't know if that's because people think Moulin Rouge is a better show or if there was controversy about, I mean, Jagged Little Pill seems to have protests outside of its theater once in a while.
There's a lot going on Twitter with them, too. There's a lot of
unrest. It is. And so I'm curious to see what happens next with that one. But yeah, anyway, so I'm, like I said, I'm happy that the Tony Awards gave us some great historical performances. I just wish it wasn't behind a paywall for some of the really wonderful things. And I would love to see a way to emphasize the future. And for you say it's about the future,
where
but I'm
going?
Not.
Where's theater going?
Show me where we're going. Next?
Yeah.
Show me where we're going. And that's a little recap, just a little brief recap of of things that we've been up to. But you know, you really tuned in for a favorite thing because you need a little something to watch for yourself.
Raindrops
or listen
on
to.
Roses,
and yes. Whiskers on kittens. I'll bunch you with my ring.
Oh, Bob.
And make Carol's gone. Bring in Jaws. You're like, oh my god.
Where is she?
Where's Jaws? Did it? Get it? That's the sound I make. Give me a C, a bouncy C. And Kevin, who wants to go first in talking about maybe something that we've discovered over the past months away?
I will. I'll share with you. Mine's sort of two built into one. One led to the other. I recently, a couple months ago, I bought, this is not my favorite thing, but this, I want everyone to read this book. It should be a favorite thing. But there's a great new book that came out this past year by a woman named Kristen Stoltz Pressley, and it's called Dorothy Fields and Her Life in the American Musical Theater. I can't give you anything but love, baby.
Oh, wow.
Hold it up and see. It's got a gorgeous picture of Miss Fields on
there.
The
cover. She is.
Yeah, and this is, it's such an easy, fun read. It's well notated. I mean, well researched. This woman has literally spent her life working on Dorothy Fields and did, like, I think, a dissertation on her, and, you know, in school. She's a professor, really, really, really smart, really. And her Twitter handle is actually Dr. Bway, D-R-B-W-A-Y. She has a PhD, really smart, really great book. It completely, you know, I've always loved Dorothy Fields. I've always loved, I mean, you know, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn is like one of my favorite, you know, musicals and one of my favorite scores. I mean, tell me a writer who had musicals on Broadway for six decades, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. She always stayed ahead of the times. She was always adapting, always changing her voice. So she wrote with Jerome Kern to Cy Coleman. It's just an unbelievably prolific career. But my favorite thing today was something I found that I never knew about. I never heard it before, and so I was on the old Spotify, and I didn't check if it's on Apple Music, but I'm sure it's there too. But there is an album that you can buy on Amazon as well. It's a disc set. Listen to me. But it is entitled "An Evening with Dorothy Fields." So this is a live audio.
What?
Yeah, man, it is so freaking amazing. So this is in 1972, if you remember, and they still have it, I believe. The 92nd Y in New York City has this thing called the Lyrics and Lyricist series. And they would have, you know, your lyricist or interviewed and have like a retrospective, if you will. So in April of 1972, that's what they did with Miss Fields. This is 2 years before she passed on. She was born in 1904. And died in 1974. And what you have in this recording is the concert. It is her. She hosts it. She has the music director. She's got a couple singers. But it is her basically going through her career. And she sings all of the songs such as, you know, On the Sunny Side of the Street, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, The Way You Look Tonight, He Had Refinement. Now she's got a husky baritone, and I'm not going to lie to you, but it is her. You know, we've interviewed people that worked with her, and there's always a glint in people's eye when they talk about Dorothy Fields. And then there was a glint in her eye because she always had a vodka martini in her hand.
Yeah.
She was definitely, we heard lots of those stories as well, but she's so funny, Rob. And the recording has all of her dialogue in between the songs. She'll sing like, you know, it's like B. Arthur's one woman show. It was like 1 minute of a song and then let's get to the dialogue. 1 minute of a song, let's get to the dialogue. But she really, is she talks about her career, she talks about her work, she talks about, you know, who she worked with over the years. And I mean, this is a person who comes from, you know, like showbiz royalty. You know, her father was famously a director and a star on the vaudeville stage. Her brothers, Herbert and Joseph, were both, you know, writers and playwrights. And it ran in the family. In fact, I learned a lot about her family by reading this amazing book. But this recording really kind of sums it all up. And you get to hear sort of this person at the very end of their career, but with so much fire and zest and zeal for life. And I was like, you know, I remember listening to it a couple weeks ago or months ago, actually, on my way to to get my COVID, you know, test. You know, and I had to walk like 20 minutes. I decided to walk, and I was laugh out loud laughing at her wit. Because her just quips are in between the songs are funny, but also her take on her material, the way a lyricist can attack their own, and I mean attack, like put their mouth around that language, their own material, it is like beyond special. And it just is, yeah, it was just really incredible. So I would, and Cy Coleman makes, he's in the audience and he comes up on stage and they sing songs from, you know, Sweet Charity and Seesaw. And that's really fun to hear him play the piano and joke with her. And they're, you know, you just get a sense that this is an old broad who is just so much fun to work with, and really, truly loved what she did. And you hear it. You hear it. Sorry. Yes.
No, I was going to say it is on Apple Music. I just downloaded it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the list of songs that she...
There's like 30 fine songs romance. On it.
Pick Yourself Up, The Way You Look Tonight. Oh, my God. He Had Refinement. Big Spender, Where Am I Going? Jesus Christ.
She has some guest singers that sing a couple things to give her a break, but it is her show. And if you listen from beginning to end, you will really understand how... Also, I have to say, Dorothy Fields, one of the very few female writers of American musical theater, and the best, you know? And she started when women were like, you can either be a nurse or a teacher or you get married. And I mean, we're talking 1920s people. And this is somebody who not only did it, but did it better than anybody else. And it reinvented herself too. I mean, now we think Cy Coleman is like this old, you know, old guy, you know, musical theater writer, but in the 60s, he was this up and coming jazz guy that, like, you know, she was getting hip with like the younger, you know, the younger guy. And it was, she was always reinventing herself. And I just think it's just incredible.
I think out of any lyricist that worked on Broadway musical theater from the beginning of time all the way up to current day, she is the one that is the most versatile in terms of being able to change with the times.
Yeah. Definitely. You
know, I mean, if you put The Way You Look Tonight next to Big Spender, you know, next to Nobody Does It Like Me, I mean, that's the same person.
You go through the roaring 20s, you have the Depression, you have World War II, you have a conservative 1950s, you got more of the fun of the 60s, all the way to her last show was Seesaw, really? Like this sort of edgy, funky little show. I mean, yeah.
So do you have a favorite Dorothy Fields song?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think, not to be cliche, but I think The Way You Look Tonight is one of the most beautiful songs ever. I think the entire score to A Tree Grows in Brooklyn is, if you've never heard Tree Grows in Brooklyn, folks, please go listen to it, because I just think it is such an incredibly beautiful score. And it confirms that theory I have, where like sometimes the composer's voice changed based on who they're writing with, you know. Like I think Julie Stein definitely, you know, when he was writing with certain people, it really made it, forced him to be better. I think Schwartz and Dietz.
Oh, Schwartz and Dietz.
And Schwartz is the composer, I believe. And his, it's just, I think some of his finest work, and in that score. So, I'll Buy You a Star, I think, is gorgeous. Yeah. So but I think Way You Look Tonight, that to me is the most.
Yeah. That's fine, I don't think sweet. That's cliched. I think that's a great one. And I won the Oscar for best song. And
Swing Time. Yeah. It was
I think she's the first woman to have won an Oscar for best song.
I believe so. Yeah. With Joan Kern.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you're right. The female lyricists, it's you can, before the 20th century, before the 21st century, you can sort of count them on one hand, right? It's her, Betty Comden, Carolyn Lee. And then later on you get Mickey Grant, right? And then Lynn Ahrens.
Yeah.
Anybody, I mean, I'm sure people are yelling right now, what about blah, blah, blah. Those are the ones that can come to mind, though. Now we have, you know, like Amanda Green, Janine Tesori does music, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, yeah, I am excited for this.
An evening with Dorothy Fields. Sit back, relax, and get to know this amazing woman.
Yeah, and it's on Apple Music. I've already downloaded it. Oh, on the sunny side of the street. Oh, grab your hand and direct your feet to the sunny side of the street.
And listeners, the book that really led me to this sort of deep dive into Dorothy is called Dorothy Fields and Her Life in the American Musical Theater. I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby by Kristen Stoltz Pressley, Pressley. You really should check out this book and buy it as well, because it really pays great respect to her and gives us a really fuller sense of the picture of who this woman was.
But I cannot wait to read it. I cannot wait to read it. Thank you for this recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. I'd like to pride myself on thinking that I've seen just about everything on YouTube that's theater related.
By now, I feel like
by now, and I feel like we could write a thesis on it. But every once in a while, I will get something that just surprises me and makes me go, I have not seen this. What is this?
Oh, boy.
And in a lot of ways, Kev, it's sort of like a Black Mirror episode for us, or a Twilight Zone episode for us. My other co-host, Ray, he texted me and he's like, have you ever seen this? And he sent me a link to something that just simply said, every show running on Broadway in 1997. And I was like, what the hell is every show running on Broadway in 1997? Well, my friends, it's about a half hour of pure brilliance. And it's from a television show, a public access show, which is still on today, which I didn't know. So this let me down a big rabbit hole. The show was called...
You sent it to me, didn't you? You sent this.
I did, because I was like, Kevin.
I watched the whole thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Oh, my goodness. Because I'm like, this sounds familiar to me.
I was like, Kevin, I think this is us. I think this is us. I think there's an alternate world where we're existing. It's called Two on the Isle with Charles Gross and Jeff Goodman. Now, these are two individuals I had never heard of before. Maybe that's because I'm not as well educated as I should be. They portrayed themselves or said that they were the Siskel and Ebert of Broadway, that it was two individuals with what seems like very different tastes going on the Manhattan Cable Network, a public access. And, you know, I love public access. And they reviewed different shows that they had seen. Charles is the more conservative of the two, more academic, I'll say. Has some very nice points that he wants to make. And then there's Jeff, who's a sassy, larger man, has no problem just interrupting Charles with a barrage of jokes. And I thought to myself, boy, these guys look familiar or something. And in this episode that my friend sent me, which you can also find in our show description, they have picked up a copy of the New York Times theater listing, the A to Z section, and Jeff just reads what shows are playing, and then he and Charles comment on them. What sounds like it could be a very dull, dry experience is one of the most riveting things I have ever seen in my life.
Varying degrees of research done, too. But...
varying degrees of research. They're very similar to us. And first of all, in 1997, there were some great shows running on Broadway, and Charles and Jeff have no problem discussing them. For example, Annie, Charles was not pleased that they cut We'd Like to Thank You, Herbert Hoover.
Yes.
And Jeff is not a huge fan of Brittany Kissinger. If you remember, Brittany Kissinger was the little girl who played Annie, and Jeff just goes, Brittany Kissinger, ugh, P.U. And I was like, Jeff, come sit by me. They talk a little bit about shows that are coming to Broadway. They recommend getting your tickets to Ragtime because they think that's going to be a big hit. And they are absolutely correct on that. Jeff is a massive Rent fan. Charles is not.
No.
Jeff loves Rent. He thinks it's, and my favorite is, he says, get a close up of me. And the camera goes to Jeff and he's like, today for you, tomorrow for me, baby. And I was like, if that was just on the shirts at Rent, I think the show would have been more successful. They have very strong opinions. Like I said, Charles gives you the more academic perspective. Jeff is giving you the sassy person that you're going to hear over at the Cosmic Diner. Just
Charles is trying to like keep things on the train on the track a little bit more. So try to keep the thing organized.
So I thought to myself, like, boy, these guys look familiar to me, and I don't know where I think I've seen them before. It is literally a half hour of just pure joy. Now, I tried to do my due diligence. I tried to do my research on who these two individuals are. They were recording up until about 10 years or so ago. And if you want, I will also post this, their Equus review with Daniel Radcliffe. I was like, they're going to hit each other. Because at this point, it's an old married couple that I just don't think likes each other anymore.
Right.
Because Charles keeps calling Daniel Radcliffe Harry Potter. And Jeff at some point just snaps and is like, he goes, stop calling him Harry Potter. You can call him the character. You can call him Daniel Radcliffe, but please stop calling him Harry Potter. And I was like, now it's going to get good. Then Jeff went away. And then it was just Charles working with a woman named Leslie Hoban Blake. And now Charles and Leslie review together. And that's Leslie, open parentheses, Hoban, close parentheses, Blake. That's how she bills herself. And Jeff is nowhere to be seen. So I was able to become friends with Charles on Twitter and on Facebook. And I watch the reviews that he and Leslie posts, and they're really interesting. But where is Jeff? Well, I just found a video on New Year's Eve on the program Dave's Gone By, hosted by Dave Lefkowitz. And he reunites Charles and Jeff via Zoom.
What?
Now, I don't know what it looks. I want to know why they broke up. I will say I know that Jeff now lives in Las Vegas, and he did lap band surgery, and he lost over 300 pounds. So he's living his best life out in Las Vegas. I would love to see these two men reunite for something, just a special, or maybe do a production of The Sunshine Boys somewhere. What was that, Theater on the Mall in New Jersey? You know, or maybe the Westbury Music Fair.
Yep. Or just on Zoom, and they can just on public access on, you know, and Channel 13.
Yeah, I'll pay for it. You know, and Charles, like I said, he now works with Leslie, open parentheses, Hoban, close parentheses, Blake. And sometimes his daughter will be a commentator. Sometimes I think he brings his wife to the shows, but I miss Jeff. Yeah. I just miss Jeff. So friends, take a look at every show running on Broadway in 1997. Charles Gross, Jeff Goodman. I'm posting the link on our show description. These guys are fabulous together, and I'm so angry that I waited so long to get on the Gross and Goodman bandwagon.
I'm fairly certain that I used to watch them when I came to New York in 2002 on one of those like MNN, you know, where Robin Bird's show was on and all of that. And I feel like, because it was a musical theater thing, and I remember being very excited. So I do recall that, and now, I'm pretty sure I used to watch them.
And friends, I'm just going to say on YouTube right now, it's only got 109 views. I'd love to make it at least 200 by the end of today. And, there's three likes, and then one person disliked it. To the one person who disliked it, you un-American son of a bitch. I don't know who you are or who you think you are, but how dare you? I am assuming you were so excited by the brilliant commentary that you accidentally clicked dislike.
Yeah.
I will chalk it up to an accident. My friend, you have 24 hours to fix your mistake. If not, I will find you. And I swear, if this was Leslie, open parenthesis, Hoban, close parenthesis, Blake, Leslie,
drama. You,
this is Machiavellian. And I'm kind of impressed. But I hope it's not you, Leslie. Charles also did a one-man play about finding a parking spot in Manhattan that's directed by his daughter. And I think that's also on YouTube. Yeah. It's How I Found an Affordable Apartment on the Upper West Side of Manhattan Without Really Trying. It's like a Spalding Gray type thing. Yes. It's like a Spalding Gray where he sits at a table and talks. So once again, folks, I am late to this bandwagon. They don't review together anymore, but I so hope that there'll be a reunion. And
go check out the old ones. The old ones are just as good. Yeah.
Yeah. The 97 and the Equus one are two of my faves. A big thanks to my other co-host, Gray Hebel, for introducing me to them. And that is my favorite thing for this week, nay, this month, nay, this year.
I love it.
So you have a lot of work to do, listeners. You have a lot of things to watch. So all the things that we've talked about are in the show description. Please, if you haven't, go see Dana H. It's a fantastic, fantastic show. Then to cheer you up, go get yourself over to Chicken and Biscuits. Puts a big smile on your face. And I think what we need right now more than anything is a big smile on our faces. Anything else, Kev?
I will give a plug real quick to I'm music directing. Todd Buonaponte, who's been a friend of our podcast, he's doing another of his shows at Green Room 42 on November 21st at 7:00. He pays homage to the leading ladies of Broadway, and it's heartfelt and hysterically funny. And so if you're not doing anything that Sunday night, do check it out, because it is a great time. But when we did it at 54 Below, I've never seen an audience leap to their feet as quickly as they did. And so this is a reprise of that show, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
I have my tickets. I am ecstatic.
Oh, good.
Yes, yeah. I will be there. Catherine DeLuce and I will be there. She was our choreographer on Merrily. We will be there together, supporting and smiling at Todd. And then our friend Robbie Rizel has a show coming up at Birdland. And we'll also put that in our info description. Good. So we've got Todd, we've got Robbie, we've got lots of great things happening. Folks, if you're in New York City over the next couple of months, because theater's opening, please don't hesitate to reach out to us on social media. Maybe we can all get lunch or something. I just had lunch with our wonderful listeners, the Rothmans, a couple of days ago, right. Joel and Jerry. That's from nice. Chicago. Yeah. And it was so nice to catch up and everything. And Mazel Tov, there was just a wedding in the family. So Mazel Tov to Joel and Jerry. all right. And I will see you soon. Kevin, I have gotten the 97 transcript of The Two on the Isle, so I think we should memorize it. We'll and I think we should do it as a play at great. Soho Playhouse.
Fantastic. Can't wait.
Yeah. Can't wait. We're gonna be very, very there. Wonderful. Yep. Directed by
Barry Kleinbord.
Yes. directed by Barry Kleinbord.
By Jamie DeRoy.
Yeah. Oh, we got a hit. All right. We will see you all very, very soon. Take care of yourselves.
We miss you. Bye.
We miss you. Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.